Blog Talk Radio.
What is going on, everyone? It is Friday Eve. Thank you, everyone, for having a great week and joining us here on The Cave Show. Been a busy week this week. Had a lot of great guests. A lot of great guests. What are we talking about today? I don't know. Were the Boston Celtics eliminated? God dang it, Milwaukee. You're going to make me apologize to you again. KD's out. James Harden disappeared. Warriors won again. One game left. I'm not changing. Denver and Portland tonight. Can Portland force a game 7? Here's a question. Can Ben Simmons hit a shot further than 5 feet out? We'll get into that as the show progresses. This is The Cave Show with PLR. Thank you for joining us today. We are brought to you, of course, by the one and only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School and Chandler Heights. That's 4991 South Alma School. Look, get in there. Let them know PLR. They will take 10% off your cigar purchase. You can also become a club member. Get a lock that bags directly up to a humidor. Never worry about your sticks going bad. They are showing all these NBA games. They're showing baseball. They're showing hockey. They're showing all the sports on one of their many televisions. So get down there, check them out, become a club member. They're now serving beer and wine so you can have your adult beverage while you kick back, enjoy your stick, and watch one of the televisions. That's Maduro's Fine Star and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chandler Heights. Again, let me know if PLR sent you. And they will take 10% off of your cigar purchase. A couple restrictions in there, but don't worry. There's still a lot of good stuff. Thank you for joining us this Friday Eve. This is PLR. This is The Cave Show. And like I said, we have a lot of stuff to get into today. Call in number 917-889-7828. That is the Carrie Lackey Law Line. We were scheduled to have Earl Burnett on of Casual Sports and the Casual Sports Network. Unfortunately, he got called away. So you are stuck with me. The call lines and the phone lines are open. So feel free to hop on if you wish. I do see I have a caller on hold. I do appreciate the patience. This is The Cave Show. This is PLR. You are on the Carrie Lackey Law Line. And to whom do I have the privilege of speaking?
Good afternoon, Paul. This is Lou once again.
Lou, what's up, buddy? Hey, Lou, you know what? I got a couple of messages yesterday, and it was about the Enhanced Sports Talk Show.
Yes.
And you gave the number so fast that I had someone get with me and say, hey, we missed that number. Could we get
okay, I'll
if
tell
he
it again.
Calls
I'll
in?
Say it again.
All right. I'm ready.
All right. First up, the main number, 712-775-7035, PIN number 410173, followed by the pound sign. If you don't press the pound sign, you don't get squat.
Now, is there a, can they do online or they have to call in to listen to you?
Well, you can listen, but you it would have to be after at the show. We're on Spreaker. We're also on
Speaker,
iTunes,
okay.
and iHeartRadio. Yeah, Spreaker is downloaded 5 minutes after the show ends, give or take.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, like I said, I got asked that question. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have him give this again. I'm going to have him slow it down just a little bit so I make sure everyone
being that we're up against the clock yesterday, you know, since you had a guest on, I had to speed up.
So, we have a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to start with hockey. Another game seven, huh? Another game seven winner.
Just the way we like it.
So, who wins this next series?
Which one?
San Jose and the Blues.
Blues.
Better defense?
Yeah, and personal reasons, too. I think you know what that means.
I got you. And what about on the other side of the tail? Carolina and Boston.
Brilliant.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the Hurricanes because I want the shenanigans to continue. I want Mr. Cherry to be so mad at the world when they win. Because you know what? If the Hurricanes win the Stanley Cup, you know what type of shenanigans and celebrations and tomfoolery is going to go on with them. Just like last year, I wanted Vegas to win the Cup. I wanted something done that no one had ever seen. This year, I want the team with the tomfoolery to keep the tomfoolery going.
All right. Well, I'll buy that.
So,
okay, here's the thing. Who is really to blame? There's a lot of blaming in the Celtics headquarters. Who's really to blame for them losing this series to the Bucks? I'll be honest with you. I did not give the Celtics much of a chance. I think the Bucks were going to take them. I thought it'd be a sweep, to be honest. I didn't see anything with the Celtics winning this series at all. But there's been a lot of griping about who's to blame. Steven said he's to blame. People are saying that Kyrie Irving was to blame, and Smart says that is a bunch of crapola.
Yeah, you're
so
not.
Who's really to blame?
Mark Smart says a bunch of BS on more than one occasion. So you're being very nice and radio clean. Yes. Here's who I think is to blame. To be honest with you, I think they're letting someone off the hook, and I think the person they're letting off the hook, I think Danny Ainge would be the first person to blame, followed by. Coach who I said when his series started was a better coach than Budenholzer, and he will coach him. So I'm dead wrong. So let me get this out there. I've got a friend that's listening, and so I promised him I'd apologize to the Bucks. I was wrong about Budenholzer. Wrong about the Bucks. I was wrong about their ability to shoot consistently. I was wrong about the role players coming up big. When it comes to the Bucks, I was 100% wrong. I owe the city of Milwaukee an apology, and now you have it. And saying all that, I think Danny Ainge was to blame, and here's why. I don't believe – I hate it when people say there's one basketball. Well, okay, we all know that. Hell, the Lakers with Magic and Byron and Kareem and Worthy, they all have one basketball. The Pistons with Dumars and Thomas and Aguirre and Laimbeer, they have one basketball. The old Celtics with Bird and Ainge and Dennis and McHale and Parrish, they had one basketball. It's not the one basketball thing. I think that is the stupidest argument that I've ever heard. And when people say that, it irritates me. It tells me that you're an analytic geek and you pay no attention to the way the game is really played. Where I think they made their mistake is they were redundant in positions where you had young guys up for contracts with older guys that were going to get more time and dominate. So, for example, Terry Rozier has a coming out party last year. Even though he didn't get to the finals, he had a coming out party, and he outplayed Eric Bledsoe last year, completely outplayed him. Now, you put him in this series against Milwaukee again, and he's sitting there saying, I outplayed this dude last year. 100% outplayed them. We eliminated them. But where am I? I'm at the end of the bench, maybe getting 10 minutes. That type of thing, because now in front of him, you have a guy who's won a title, and anybody in their right mind is going to go out and get Kyrie. But you have Rozier in the contract year, now getting 10 minutes in the playoffs. You have Jason Tatum, who's saying, okay, now am I, now that we've inserted Gordon Hayward back in the starting lineup, am I behind Gordon Hayward? Am I the number two option? Last year in the playoffs, I had the opportunity and the green light to shoot all I want. Now I got to defer to Kyrie, but do I have to defer to Brandon Hayward? I mean, there's so much. And so I think you were redundant in the positions that you absolutely couldn't be redundant in. And
right.
I blame management for that, because you have to know when you have a young guy that's up and coming and they're going into contract years, they're not going to be happy at the end of the bench playing 10 minutes. It's just not going to work. And that's where you get that dissension from. And that's where you get the you know what? If you're sitting at the end, if you're Terry Rozier and your team beat Milwaukee last year and you dominated Eric Bledsoe last year, would you be happy to sit at the end in a contract year? Would you be happy to sit on the bench down 2-1, down 3-1, and this guy is playing well and you're
no.
looking around like, hey, over here, he couldn't do nothing with me last year. That's a bad mix. That's a bad fit. And we always give Danny Ainge and all the credit in the world, all the moves, all the shrewd stuff, I've joked around. If you see Danny Ainge or your caller ID don't answer, but this is one time where he has to get some blame for not realizing that the emotional part of the game, for the amount of pieces that you had, this was the time to move some of those assets away. And he didn't do it. And he thought they would all play in the sandbox and sing Kumbaya, and it doesn't happen like that. I mean,
no.
Kyrie has a lot of money, and he has a ring. So if he chooses to go somewhere else, fine. Terry Rozier doesn't have a lot of money in terms of NBA
right.
money, and he doesn't have a ring. He's still playing to prove. So why would he want to take one for the team and sit at the end of the bench when it's going to hurt him financially? I don't blame them for being upset.
Yeah. All right. And one day after Tyronn Lue bolts out of the Lakers deal, well, we have another candidate maybe, Frank Vogel.
Yeah, he's interviewing this afternoon.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to say this with a sense of pride. Who in the world 10 years ago would have thought, 5 years ago would have thought, 4 years ago would have thought, 3 years ago would have thought the Phoenix Suns head coaching position was a better job than the Los Angeles Lakers coaching position with LeBron James on the roster?
No one I know.
Nobody. Nobody. And I think you have more problems there than you think you have. With Tyronn Lue, they offered him 3 years, which basically says, we want you to stay the coach as long as LeBron is here. That's basically what they're saying without saying. Right? Because they're not giving him 5 years. Hell, Monty Williams got 5 years. We're not giving you 5 years. We're giving you three. Guess who has 3 years left on that contract? LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who we want you to put on that staff with you? Jason Kidd. So what we basically want to do is have you coach him for the 3 years, and then when he goes on and we're going to move you on, and we're going to go ahead and give Jason Kidd the job. And I don't blame Tyler. You get $10 million coming from him from Cleveland. Go ahead, man, and keep that money. But here's the problem with the Lakers, and everybody doesn't want to say it, and it is absolutely the truth. Let's say management was better. Let's say upper management was better. It is still hard to find a coach to coach in the pressure cooker that's L.A., where they think that every year they should be playing for a title, with an aging superstar who alienated some of his players, some of his teammates, who still think they're going to be traded. And now you have to match the aging superstar's talent with the young guys that are still there without knowing if you can even sign a free agent or trade for a free agent to bring in. That is a lot. That is not attractive. And I hear, some people saying, heck, from ESPN, Stephen A. Smith, people said, people possibly whispering in Genie's ear, trade LeBron. Let me tell you something. If you thought signing LeBron as a free agent was tough, who would trade for LeBron right now, knowing that he does not like playing with young guys. So you'd have to match him with the right vets, with the right shooters, with the right team, with the right coach, with the right everything. I think he is the most untradeable player in the NBA. Because if you send him to a young team, you have the Lakers all over again. He doesn't want to play with young guys. He doesn't want to come in with a bunch of young guys. So you're not going to send him to a team that has just a bunch of young guys. And you can't trade him for a young guy because his contract won't match up anyway. So you got to either move him for a vet or someone with expiring deals. So he is untradeable. If you're these teams, tell me if you're ready to implode your team for what LeBron brings. If you're the Nuggets, are you parting with the future of a Jokic or a Murray or a Harris and all those young guys that are going to be good even better in 3 years, or for someone who's not going to be as good in 3 years because of their age, and you have to tear up the entire way you coach, the entire way you do things? You know you're not trading him in state, so he's not going up to Sacramento. You know you're not trading him across the hallway, so he wouldn't be going to the Clippers. Let's say I heard someone earlier say, well, he could trade him to the Knicks. That'd finally be good.
Yeah.
Who in the hell on the Knicks do you want? If I said, I'll give you LeBron James, just give me back something. Who on the Knicks do you want? There is nobody on the Knicks I want to take back. He's untradeable.
Yeah.
They got to make it work. They have no choice. They have to make it work. Did you ever see Goodfellas?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Do you remember the scene when Aaron pulled the gun on him and he wakes up and she's sitting on top of him with the gun, and then he knocks her off and he puts the gun on her? And she yells, I'm sorry. And then the next scene is he's at his girlfriend's house, and Paulie and what's his name? I can't think of his name, but they come over.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is no good. This is no good. You can't do this. You can't leave. You got to keep up appearances. You can't leave. Well, same thing. You got to keep up appearances. You can't leave. So what are you going to do? Got to make it work. They have no choice.
Uh-huh.
Got to make it work. So
exactly.
There's your LeBron situation.
Yeah. It's a soap opera.
It is. It's good, though. It's really riveting. Keeps me entertained.
Yeah. Well, of course, we tune in tomorrow for another edition of As the Ball Bounces. Oh, boy.
Yeah, as LeBron goes.
I thought
the
that.
LeBron summers. The LeBron summers are always interesting. And Lakers can be good.
Okay, I like that.
Lakers really can. Lakers can be good. They really truly can. I just think they got to let the young guy develop. And unfortunately, they don't have time because of LeBron's age. Everyone, it's like I'm the only one that's not afraid to say that. Everyone just keeps saying stuff like, oh, well, you know, you only have him really great for 3 more years. Or, you know, if he plays more than 3 years, who knows? He's an aging superstar. It's really just that simple. Look at his contemporaries. Chris Paul slowing down. Dwayne Wade retired. Turk Heiner's been out of the league forever. Guys in the draft after him, they're retiring. He is an aging superstar. That doesn't mean that he can't play. That doesn't mean he's bad. He's not the best player in the league anymore. But he's not the worst player in the league. He's definitely still a top five. But he's the most difficult player to build around because of the way he plays and what you have to put around him. See, people in L.A., and people that love LeBron just want to say, well, if you gave him shooters, they would have been all right. No. You couldn't just give him shooters. You couldn't just say, okay, we're going to line up a bunch of guys that hit shots. We're going to give him McDermott and Korver and this guy, and he would have been okay. No. If you look at what he did in Cleveland, look at the mixture of people he had. He had a tough-minded, stubborn Kyrie Irving who could play, especially when he's playing next to someone of greater or equal caliber. And then he had a Kevin Love who rebounded the hell out of the ball. And then he had role players like Tristan Thompson who just wanted to rebound and defend. He had all these other, he didn't just have 8,000 shooters. He had all these other things around him. And it gets lost in translation because everyone just says, well, if you would have gave him shooters, he would have been fine. No, he needs more than that. And as he ages, he's going to need more than that. It's just the truth. And I don't understand why anyone wants keeps fighting that. It's the truth.
Yes.
So, that's the story, my friend.
I got one more note. Pujols, of course, is having quite a year, and now he has another accomplishment. 2,000 RBIs.
He's a hell of a player, man. He's a first ballot walk in the Hall of Fame.
There's only two others that have more than that since RBIs came official. A-Rod, 2086, and Aaron, 2297. I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
What about Babe Ruth, right? Well, here's a little side note. Prior to 1920, Ruth and another guy, Cap Anson, also had 2,000 RBIs, but their exact totals are disputed, so we can't really tell. So on the record, Pujols is only the third.
Gotcha.
Good argument, though.
Yeah, good. Hey, listen.
See, because, you know, they would fall back to before 1910 or something, called 1912, the dead ball era. And they didn't really keep track of that because it was hardly anybody even scoring back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Luckily, they weren't watching baseball back then. It would have been a real boring game. Ugh.
Well, yeah, because there were definitely no home runs in some of those cavernous parks. But then, if you look at the game, look at all those triples they used to hit back in the day. Because the parks were so big. Yeah, the parks were so big. I once did this story on baseball a long time ago. And some of the home runs, some of the fields had shots where literally a home run would have been like 500 feet. So there weren't that many home runs. And if anyone is interested in going back, just look at the home run totals between like 1898 and like 19, it was like 1916. No one was hitting home runs. The parks were just too big. But triples were really inflated.
Now they're just scarce.
Yeah, because nobody, analytics has taken over everything. You know, it's sad. It really is. I just think it's really depressing. Because no one steals bases because analytically. You don't want to do it because yada, yada, yada. Okay, just to give you a couple quick numbers on triples. Excuse me, Lou. 1902, yes. Sam Crawford, 22. Tommy Leach in 1902, 22. Sam Crawford again, 25 in 1903. Chief Wilson, 1912, 36. So the parks were so big, you had a bunch of people hitting triples. So that had a lot to do with it back then.
I get it. All right, Paul, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks. Hopefully we'll talk again tomorrow. And try to spread the word for Saturday's show.
You got it, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, my man. Thank you. I think it's funny how they change it, because that's the one thing with baseball they could change. You change the park size, you change the dimensions, you change the hitting. You change who you attract. If the wind blows to the right, get you a lefty, hit home runs. The wind blows the other way. If it's blowing out in Wrigley Field, you have a better chance to hit home runs. The wind is blowing in, knocks everything down. It's the only sport where the stadium that you play in, the dimensions are different in each one, and they basically sign players to meet their stadium. If it's a pitcher-friendly part, look at Colorado. Remember when Mike Hampton was balling down Atlanta, signing all that money, that big money up in Colorado, went up there and his crap carried like hell? But you can go to some of these cavernous parks and just dominate. I mean, you can just dominate. So the park means a lot in baseball. Could you imagine if someone got 36 triples nowadays? They wouldn't let that guy keep running. And listen, I'm sort of being nice, but I'm not. the analytical nerds would come up with a reason why a triple is bad in baseball. If analytics were around the way they are now, there'd be no Ricky Henderson, and he wouldn't be a Hall of Fame player. He wouldn't be a Tim Raines. He wouldn't be a Hall of Fame player. Those Cardinal teams with Tommy Herr and Willie McGee and Vince Coleman, they wouldn't be around. Hell, Vince Coleman wouldn't even be in the league because a lot of the stuff he was in the league for was predicated on speed and his ability to steal bases. They wouldn't even be around because analytically, it's a terrible thing to do. You shouldn't run because analytically, an out at second is a bad thing. We're just going to shift on everyone and have players complain about it. You know the best way to beat the shift? Learn how to hit the ball in the other freaking direction. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? If you're a lefty, learn how to hit the ball down the third baseline. It's crazy how Tony Gwynn and George Brett are great Hall of Fame players because they could use the entire ballpark. Or, you know what? How about this one? Lay down a bunt, but you can't lay down a bunt because analytically, that's a bad thing to do, especially if you're a three-hitter, four-hitter, or five-hitter, because you should just sit there and wait on the home run ball. Because analytically, that's the right thing to do. It's a good thing that marriages aren't based on analytics because you'd have a whole bunch of unhappy people out there. There is still something that's meant to be said about knowing what you do and having a gut feeling for something. Because it also allows you to know the people and not just analytically match things. You have to know the people as well and know human tendencies as well. That helps. That's why baseball is marketed to a bunch of old dudes, 55 and older, who aren't going to be here in 40 years, and your game is going to progressively die over and over. This used to be America's pastime. It's not anymore. And I love baseball. I love covering baseball. Covering the Diamondbacks, it's fun. But guys, you guys have to come, analytic geeks, and I'm not talking about the Diamondbacks. I'm talking baseball. Analytic geeks, you got it. You got to let it go. Sitting around waiting for three-run homers, no. Small ball sometimes, especially if you don't have that guy that's going to get 50 home. So here's what I understand about baseball, right? When guys were hitting 70 home runs, oh, man, they're cheating. That's bad for the game. You got to be able – shouldn't be that many guys hitting that many home runs. So now there's not that many guys hitting home runs. Yeah, but we're going to sit around and wait for these home runs because stealing is a bad out. It's a bad out. I'm going to tell this story one more time. One more time. The most exciting thing I've ever seen in a span of about 10, 15 minutes in baseball was Ricky Henderson walking, stealing second, stealing third, coming home on a ground out. He put so much pressure on the pitcher. And you're going, oh, well, there you go again, using a Hall of Fame guy, Vince Coleman. Pitcher's constantly twitching, looking at first. Is he going? Is he not going to go? How about this? Having really fast guys anyway at the start of your lineup, because if they get on, they're less apt to get hit in the double plays. I can't think of the guy's first name, but Voit that plays for the Yankees. Good kid, good talent, hits the ball hard. When he runs the bases, I swear to God, he's carrying five pianos on his back. I'm not even fast, and I think I can run that fast. I can't hit like him. Do you remember when you were a kid, though, when you would play softball or baseball or whatever, and you have someone hit, and then you'd run, And you'll be like, oh, I'm going to hit from this. And they tell you this is the part I used to love. Tag up. So you had to touch home plate first. That was you tagging up to let everyone know that you were going to be the runner, even though everyone knew because you were standing right next to the guy with the bat. We used to come up with some dumb things playing ball in Chicago. This is the Cave Show with PLR. This is PLR. I want to wrap this up with hoops before we get out of here. Tonight, Toronto versus Philadelphia. Everyone keeps asking, is Joel Embiid going to show up tonight? We're going to get the sixth Joel Embiid. What Joel Embiid are we going to get? Is he going to play? Is he going to get 33 points? Is he going to get five? Forget all that. It's Ben Simmons going to show up. Now, let me get some full disclosure. I brought up to Gerald Barrett of Hoops Habit earlier this week, would he be a good fit for Phoenix? And I said, yeah, because he can shoot. But while he's working on his shot, Phoenix has shooters. So I think he would be effective. And because of the way DeAndre Ayton plays, he wouldn't clog up the middle and prevent him from driving. Now, people mistakenly took that I said he could play here just because he can't shoot. No, he's got to work on a shot. You can't just say, well, I do what I do. You've got to improve. You've got to improve your craft. And he has to learn how to shoot. He has to, even if he doesn't become a great shooter, he has to shoot to keep the defense honest. He hasn't scored more than 10 points and not nan one of these games. And you heard me right. Not nan one of these games against Toronto. Because Toronto is basically saying, man, shoot. And he just won't do it. Sometimes I think he's afraid to shoot from the free throw line. You've got to be able to pull the trigger. You've got to be able to keep someone honest. And if he doesn't, I just don't see him getting by. And I don't see him doing it, so I don't see him getting by. In Toronto and going into Philly tonight and winning that game. Okay, let me break down Dame Lillard for you real quick. Wow, you wascally rabbit. So here it is in a nutshell. Dame comes out and he dominates Russ. And everyone's like, oh, man, everyone been sleeping on Dame. Well, one, you're an idiot if you've been sleeping on Dame. Two, Russell Westbrook in a playoff setting, when everything gets tighter, becomes, for a player like Dame Lillard and for the Portland Trail Blazers, an easier person to guard. One, because you can draw Russ in on personal challenges. You can pull him in on a personal challenge. So if you come down and you're working Russ, Russ is going to come back and try to work you. You know, he likes saying he can bust your ass, yada, yada, yada. Now, that doesn't take away from his greatness, so I'm not saying that. But you can play a guy like that because you know he's going to do one of two things. He's either going to bail you out with the jump shot or he's going straight downhill on you. One or the other. That's it. And yes, I'm not looking over his passing ability, but his passing are a byproduct over his ability to have the ball in his hand a lot and want to control everything in the offense. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are different because they're not ball-dominant point guards. Actually, you could almost say that Nikola Jokic is the point guard because there's several times in the game he's bringing the ball up court. So now what are you doing with Jamal Murray? You're putting Dame in the actual picks, screens, pinch downs, everything else. So he's not just standing out there saying, I know Russ is going to bail me out on some jump shots. Or once he gets that decision, he's just coming straight downhill and I can almost release him to my help. You've got to run with Gary Harris and you've got to run with Jamal Murray. And you've got to watch for back picks and screens and cuts and double cuts and people putting you in constant action because you never know what Nikola Jokic is going to do with the ball. So it's not so much as we figure out how to stop Dame, it's that Dame now has to completely exert himself on both ends of the court. And considering that the big man of Portland is banged up, you're calling on McCollum and Lillard to do the yeoman's work of the scoring. That is a lot to do when they're both chasing around Gary Harris, and then they're chasing around Jamal Murray, and now you're coming and you're hitting them with Will Barton, and you're hitting them with Malik Beasley, who's going to get in them defensively. It's a lot to ask because Denver keeps sending waves at you. One wave, the next wave, the next wave, the next wave. I think Dennis Schroeder is an NBA player. I think he's a good player. But are you saying he can guard McCollum or Lillard? No. It's not even fair, man. It's bringing a knife to a gunfight. And so he dominated that. This series is different. This series is different. And you're playing a guy that runs the center that's a Swiss Army knife. Hell, that's two Swiss Army knives combined into one. And then you got a guy like Paul Millsap who is exploiting every time you put Farik Aminu on him or you put Mo Harkless on him, he's exploiting them. Where are you going to go to next? Cantor, playing with a separated shoulder, is an okay defender, but you're going to put him in a position and put him in action where he's trying to decide, do I guard Jokic or do I have Millsap? Whichever one he picks, the other one's going to go off. Denver's tough, man. Give me Denver tonight. We've already talked about Boston. Again, I apologize to the Bucks. Y'all kick some ass. But everyone wants to blame Kyrie. Everyone wants to blame the coach. The coach took the blame. I think you blame Danny Ainge. Again, what do I know? Houston, last thing we're going to get into today before we get up out of here. There are people in this league that have the clutch gene. And we all heard Max Kellerman the other day say, Kawhi is more clutch than Kobe. And as soon as he said it, the first thing I thought of was, all these analytic geeks are going to run to their stat sheets. They're going to run to the basketball reference guide. They're going to chart everything that Kawhi shot with 2 minutes left, the game tied or down by two or up by two, down by three, up by three. And they're going to do the same thing for Kobe and say, see, I told you, Kawhi is more clutch. Because that's what LeBron fans do. When you say Michael or Kobe were more clutch, they run to the, yeah, well, in games decided by 3 points or less with LeBron having the ball, his percentage is actually better than what Kobe's percentage was, and for you to say Kobe was more clutch, then you're wrong, because analytically, here are the numbers to prove it. Okay. Adrian Dantley had better numbers than Mark Aguirre when he played for the Detroit Pistons. Better numbers, but he wasn't a better player. He wasn't more clutch just because with 2 minutes left, analytically, he shot 40% and Mark shot 20%. Clutch is watching someone do something that's clutch other than just a shot. I can hit you with stats all day long. And they say, oh, well, you just say if LeBron passed, Michael wouldn't have passed. It's more to it than that. James Harden, who averaged 36 points a game, you couldn't make him take a shot last night. And don't give me that double-team crap. He was getting the ball from rebound, passing forward. Getting the ball, passing forward. Trying to throw alley-oops from beyond the three-point line to Clint Capella. Look, I take no joy in saying this because I am a 100% Sun Devil. But James Harden has a tendency to run from the big moment. See, clutch isn't him hitting a shot in the regular season, a three-pointer in overtime, getting fouled, refs not calling it, but they win and celebrate. Yeah, that's clutch. That's regular season clutch. See, you don't have to shoot the ball in the last 1-2 minutes to be clutch. When KD went out with an injury and it was clear he wasn't coming back, did we see more James Harden or less James Harden? See, that's in your clutch. That's when the best player on the team says, in a timeout or in a huddle or bringing everyone together, look, he ain't coming back. You know that crap I've been doing, that dribble, 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 dribble. I'm going to do that a whole lot more now because I don't have to worry about shooting the top of him. He did the opposite. Steph was like 1-for-78. When KD went out, did his level of play pick up? Yeah. All of a sudden, did he start hitting threes? Yeah. Because that's clutch. This guy on our team is out. I need to stand up. That doesn't mean, see, if you're up by five, that doesn't mean you have to hit a game-winning shot with under a minute. It means maybe I put my team up by five. Maybe we were up by six, and I hit a shot to put us up by 8 or 9, pushing the game out of reach. Yes, less pressure technically, but that's still clutch. And that's the difference. Look, Michael Irvin once said, just because you're the number one wide receiver on a team doesn't make you a number one wide receiver. And it's the same in basketball. Golden State is 29-4 when Durant doesn't play and Steph Curry does. See, here's the difference between the two teams. Durant is out. Set to be evaluated next week. Calf strain, as we know last year, he had a calf strain, missed about a week in 3 games. See, when Durant is out, and I don't mean on the bench, he's out, he's hurt. Here's a story about the Warriors team. They won a title before he got there. They won 73 games before he got there. They were a LeBron James putting his private parts on the back of another man's head away from winning 2 titles in a row, which possibly could have led to 4. So they have a flow. Draymond, Steph, Clay, Iggy, Livingston, they have a flow. So when KD goes out, and now KD's out, and it's not like, well, KD is may come back. He's out for the next game. You know what they say? Oh, well, hell. We're just going to go back to the same old flow. It's like kids today. If their Apple Music stops working, if their Spotify stops working, if they can't get into iHeartRadio and they're having a party at night, they're like, oh, crap. Oh, what are we going to do? You dropped your gun when you busted the window. No, I'm just kidding. What are we going to do? We don't have anything to hook anything up to play music. If a parent's Spotify goes out, iHeartRadio, they go to that garage, they break that CD player, they break out that cassette player, and a party changes from just a party of music to a 70s party, and we're going to bump to these old things. We're going to bump to these old cuts. And that's what the Warriors can do. KD's out, okay, no problem. You know what we're going to do? We're going to bump to these old cuts. Someone go get that cassette player. We're going to show you how we did it. Isn't it amazing how Steph just starts hitting shots? It's called clutch. And every year we get to this point and we say, well, James hurt. You know what? Nah, he's fatigued. You think James Harden is going to enjoy running in circles, trying to keep up with Steph and Clay in Houston. And then come fourth quarter, man, please. Give me Golden State in game six. Give them to me. Just that simple. Sorry about that. Couldn't get to the mute button quick enough. Tomorrow's Friday, y'all. Fun day. We're going to get in it, though. Scheduled to come on tomorrow, the Cuban Cowboy, Tony Capobianco. Talk a little baseball. Talk a little South Beach baseball with him. All calls made via the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Thank you, Lou, for giving a call in today. Good loyal fan. Really appreciate it. The Twitter, Instagram, Facebook fan page. At the Sports Cave. Cave is with a K. SportsCave.com. Again, Cave is with a K. And you can get me on the Twitter at PLR on Sports. Until tomorrow, everyone, have a beautiful Thursday. We'll get with you then. This is the Cave Show with PLR. This is PLR. Everyone have a great day.